Welcome to Open Paddock, episode 214 for Tuesday, January 14th, 2014. It's a new year and we're back in the saddle again. Tonight on the show, we're going to talk about IndyCar. Alan Bestwick to announce for ABC. And poll day is moving. Oh, jeez. Mazda Road to Indy, Indy Lights chassis info, and Sebring testing on tonight's show. In the rally section, number 199 back at Super Rally Team USA. And speaking of Rally America, Mike Shaw stirred up a hornet's nest this week. We'll discuss that. And there's a Dakar-ish event being held in a desert, the Atacama Desert. So we'll talk about that. And Monty, sports car, test car testing, world challenge fields are big. And there's a new class, the TCA class in F1. The increase in the amount of points paid to the winner of the final race of 2014 is inversely proportional to the decrease in our motivation to pay much attention. And oh yeah, Jerez testing January 28th with the new anteater cars, or as we like to call them.
That's a polite way to say it.
The angle of the dangle.
Higher performance.
This is Open Paddock.
And faster and more reliable.
Gentlemen, tonight I have two of Open Paddock's finest joining me. I'm Mike Weitzel, and tonight Doug Patterson is joining me. Mr. Patterson, drink roll call.
I'm having a martini.
And Mr. Mike Shaw is also here. Mike?
Good evening. I got my gin and tonic, aviation gin.
I'm doing my cheater gin and tonic. It's 10 ounces of tonic. It's one packet of true lime, dehydrated lime flavoring.
Oh,
and jigger of gin. It's pretty weak, but yeah, I've said it before. That true lime stuff is great because I don't have rotting limes in my fruit drawer.
Yeah, I've got desiccated limes right now.
you know, it's
for
time.
A few years.
It's time to just throw them away when most of the skin is black.
Say when they become rock hard.
I was going to say they're like cricket balls now.
Anyway, you know, we got a bunch to talk about on the show, so we're going to jump right into it. And the first thing on my list for this evening, gentlemen, Formula E had a demonstration run at CES. I think that's brilliant.
It's a good move for them.
Yeah.
And it taps into the market that seems to want to give them money.
Yeah. CES is the Consumer Electronics Show. It's held in Los Angeles. Early January every year. And it's become less and less of the showcase it was in the past. But, they're still going strong, and they bring in media from all over the world to cover it. But it's been replaced by, hey, we can introduce this stuff on the internet or do it Apple style, and people pay just as much attention or more because we're not saturated with all kinds of other stuff coming out, you know, electronic fly swatters and crap like that that pour out
it's
of the
for the other guys.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a forum for the other guy.
It's all the other crap that comes out of the tech world, you know.
Now, some of it's innovative and new, neat ideas.
Yeah,
but
it's true.
90% crap.
And most of the people are there, I think, for the what is it that they have going on at the same time? Isn't it like some big porn convention going on at the same time, too?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Anyway.
To coincide with, like, some adult awards or something. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and then so you can get your Bluetooth enabled little fapping unit or whatever.
F1 car nose.
Chin up the nose, chin up the nose. Oh, it burns.
Burns.
Jeez. Ah. Back on the rails. Back on the rails.
Hey, welcome to the New Year.
All right. Welcome again. And first, after we talk about all the preview junk of just minor tidbits of information on CES and Formula E, we're jumping right into IndyCar. And we have a new IndyCar Open Paddock reporter. Doug, tell us more.
Well, you know, we've got a few new ads this new year. First of all, some of you already knew that Josh Tons was joining us. He joined us as a photographer last year, helped us cover the Grand Am race there at Kansas. He's stepping up his game and is going to be reporting on the Tudor United Sports Car Championship and the Continental Tire Series as well. And he's full bore, you know, full steam ahead on that right now, so producing some good stuff, and look for his review of the Roar Before the 24, and we'll get to that, and his coverage of the 24 hours kind of up here at the end of the month. We also have Stephen Cook, who's going to be covering the SCCA Pro Racing for us. So, you know, that would be, you know, our favorite series, Mr. Weitzel, the Pirelli World Challenge. He's already got a lot of neat ideas lined up for that. So look for some exciting content from Steven. But also the MX5 Cup, Trans Am, and some of the SCCA Junior Formula, the F1600, F2000 Formula Atlantic stuff as well. And for IndyCar, we are very happy to announce Eric Hall. Of many of you probably already know Eric as the writer, author of another IndyCar blog. Fantastic person with amazing insight into the history of IndyCar, and he's going to be writing on all things open wheel, American open wheel for us. Looking at not just you know, kind of what happened during the race, but some insight as to what it means, where the series is going, and right now a lot of where it's been. He's got a really nice piece looking at the very early history of open wheel racing here in the States, kind of a where we came from type of piece. And every week he's going to have another little segment of that, moving us up through the decades. So very very happy to have Mr. Hall. I think that's going to be a great thing for us. I don't know if it's going to be a great thing for him or not to be associated with us, but we're happy to have him.
Circling the drain.
Yeah.
Well, we've got a bit of IndyCar news to go over for the last month-ish. Not a whole lot happens in the off-season, but that said, it kind of comes to the head in off season because right now, this week, winter meetings are going on in Indianapolis for the IndyCar series. Driver physicals are going on. So there are some, we do expect to hear some driver news throughout the week, and certainly more information on changes in the series and what have you. Specifically, the Indianapolis Star, Kurt Cavan, is reporting that pole day is moving to Sunday for reals.
You know, we talked about this with Fred, but well, looks like it's going to happen. I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan.
I don't see the value in it. I mean, I guess that they feel, you know, they're looking at this year's TV schedule and they feel they have a better window Sunday from 1 to 3 than they do on Saturday. That's the only thing I can think of.
I know, but it's just the, I don't know, it's the curmudgeon in me. It's always been on Saturday, right?
Yeah. Well, I hate to be this way. I agree, Doug. It's the curmudgeon in me as well. And it's the annoyance of all the people who are like, well, you can't have, you know, another race at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway because it cheapens the event, the 500.
Sure you can, but...
And then, you know, this, that, and the other. And now this, we're changing qualifying format one more time because everything we've done up to this point hasn't had any traction. And in the end, really what you're saying is you're acknowledging that the series and the individual race, the Indianapolis 500, the crown jewel in American motorsports, does not have anywhere near the traction it had even 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fair enough, fair enough. And so, you know, I understand the economic necessity or, you know, the motivation to do this. Doesn't mean I have to like it or be happy about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, in the end, you know, what is going to happen moving forward? I mean, when this format is tried and, you know, it gains a little bit of traction, but then it doesn't stick. And, you know, the next few years after that, we're back to the same spot we were before. You know, what do you do? Nitro Circus Live, you know, 2018 at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. you've tried a bunch. You've tried a bunch. And it's hard for all the traditionalists who have seen these changes and all they see in return after those changes are made are nothing consequential. So one more change, I feel it's just continuing to move in the wrong direction. And unfortunately, these are changes that are made in reaction to, well, people aren't interested. So yeah, it's too bad. And as much as we're fanboys of the IndyCar series, we have to continue to recognize that not everybody cares about the things that we care about. Boo.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. We're hearing word that the Indianapolis Motor Speedway is adding a vintage race somewhere in the summer of 2014.
Looking, I don't know, like, about you guys, but I love vintage racing.
Yeah, I think it's a good ad for the Speedway. I mean, one of the real attractions to the Speedway is the history that exists at that venue. I mean, you go through the museum there, and you look at how far back in automotive history, you know, that venue has seen and has been a part of. I'm kind of surprised it's taken this long to have a vintage event there.
Yeah. You know, every now and then they'll drag some cars out of the museum or they'll, you know, at the 500 every year, there's a display of vintage cars.
Yeah, and there's their little parade lap before the race, but.
But never a race. That'd be cool. Never a race. This would be very cool. So. Worth a look at. This is revealed by the Sports Car Vintage Racing Association website. The race will be June 2014, and it will be on the road course, the reconfigured road course.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, that's the other thing that makes this possible is that we have a road course now. It's just, and when I say I'm surprised that we haven't had one yet, I should put the caveat. I'm surprised we haven't had one since Formula One started coming to Indy. Yeah. We've had the road course. Because of course you're not gonna race some, you know, some of these vintage oval racers on the oval. I mean, the risk of destroying them and the person just way too high.
Yeah. Now the other thing that was kind of revealed in this announcement is that fans will be allowed to camp in the infield.
wait, for the vintage race?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
For the, I was going to say, race. For May? Oh, that's going to get seriously sketch. But no, I can see it for the vintage race. That makes total sense.
I'm just thinking of all the late night shenanigans on the golf course. This is going to be interesting. So IndyCar has filed a lawsuit against the promoters of the Sao Paulo race.
Really?
Well, is this surprising? I mean, really?
Oh, and the link I put up there, which was about a week and a half to 2 weeks old, is no longer found, so I can't give you any more information.
I was gonna say,
on that.
Apparently, this any information about this is none of your business.
Yes.
NSA scripted.
So, apparently, the Indianapolis Motor Speed, the IndyCar Series, has filed lawsuit against Redacted and the promoters Redacted. I agree. No big surprise. I guess, well, when I initially saw that IndyCar was no longer going back to Sao Paulo, I didn't know the state of the contract with Sao Paulo. I didn't, you know.
Right. Thought it was kind of a mutual thing.
Yeah. It sounds like it wasn't. Sounds like Sao Paulo was trying to get out of it. And no matter what IndyCar tried, you know, well, we can move the date. Well, we can do this. Well, we can do that. And they're like, nah, yeah.
And so IndyCar is
pretty nice without you.
Yeah. So IndyCar is saying, well, that's all well and good, but you still owe us our sanctioning fee.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently that was due this summer, $10 million worth of it.
Okay.
And, they had signed a contract extension with them to run the event through 2014 and said, nah.
Yeah, you know, those elected officials, they're sneaky like that.
Yeah, well.
I imagine the promoters, you know, they're kind of in a difficult position because if the city said, no, we don't want to do it anymore, the promoters are the ones that are left holding the bag.
Right, right. No, well, and it's on them to have said, hey, if the city shuts us down, the city shuts us down, then we can do about it. You have to write that into the contract. And if they didn't, you know, if they left themselves vulnerable to that, then, well, shame on them. You know, here's a lesson in contract writing 101.
Yeah. So there are going to be some changes to the tub going forward in 2014. Specifically to the cockpit and side intrusions. I think reading this article and reading some of the stuff about it, it sounds like what IndyCar did was they made the cars compliant with the FIA's side intrusion safety measures.
Mm-hmm.
And then they realized, yeah, that doesn't really work on ovals because the forces are so much higher than any, you know, F1 car would have to absorb
right
in an accident.
It's,
so, go ahead.
Well, and even in, you know, even in a lot of street car races or street and road circuit races, but especially the street races, you know, you have you have Monaco and you have Singapore, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Singapore probably comes the closest to a street car race in IndyCar, but still, the Singapore circuit, as bumpy as it is from an F1 point of view, is nothing compared to, say, Houston.
Oh, God, no.
Or Baltimore. You know, so the forces and the loading that have to be endured even off of an oval are higher than what you'd see in other types of Formula Car racing.
Yeah. So the IndyCar Series has contracted Aerodyne Composites out of Indianapolis, and they're going to carry out modifications, which include basically adding 20 pounds of extra, you know, carbon fiber to the cockpit sides to reinforce all of that. It's interesting, you know, this is in response to a couple of accidents. One of them was at Sonoma. It was Sebastian Bourdais at Sonoma in 2012.
Oh, when he got speared in the side.
Yeah, and apparently that caused heavy impact to his ribs.
Yeah.
And then the other one was Justin Wilson at Fontana.
Yep.
The cockpit walls cracked and collapsed, and that's what, you know, fractured his, what was it, his pelvis?
Something like that.
Yeah, it was, I can't remember for sure, but it was. So good deal for that. I'm glad that IndyCar is using their best judgment instead of the FIA's best judgment as to what's best for this form of racing, because it is very different than F1.
You know, the other thing that they're changing that I'm really happy about, and we've talked about this before, and that's the steering kickback.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how many broken wrists have we had in the past few seasons?
Yeah.
Not because of the impact itself, but from the impact. You know, thrashing the front wheels and basically just ripping the steering wheel out of the hands of the drivers. And so they're going to have a some sort of dampening system to lessen those loads. I don't know whether this is a breakaway thing or a fluid-based hydraulic sort of dampening
Yeah.
system or what, but.
Before, what they were talking about earlier, you know, when I talked about this a little bit last year, they had mentioned trying to make specifically the components, you know, up near the main steering components weaker than where it, you know, connects to the main steering shaft up to the, you know, the
Yeah,
wheel.
right.
So
That
that way
would
it would break
shear.
away. Yeah.
That's what I meant by a breakaway system, as
Yeah.
opposed to a you know, the. They looked into putting in power steering. We talked about that.
Yeah.
It looks like they're shying away from the power steering solution.
Yeah, they're shying away from it because a couple of reasons: the cost and the real estate. There's just not enough, you know, according to what they're saying, there's just not enough room to implement it in the existing chassis. It wasn't designed around it. So,
Yeah.
I don't, you know, it probably could be implemented, but an off-the-shelf solution can't be implemented. So maybe a costlier system would have had to have been designed.
Wait till the next tub revision.
Yeah, indeed. New headrest materials are coming into play. Apparently, the stiffer foam that's in the DW12 is not much to the liking of the drivers, and they've been shoving little pieces of foam in there to kind of wedge the helmet in place, especially on the ovals where, you know, you've got heavy G's that are constant load and all of that. So they're going to be revising the foam that's in there, so it's going to be like a dual density foam, to allow for you to wedge a helmet in there, but also have enough room to move. So there's a few changes upcoming. Other than that, you know, there's some potential for a new floor for Indy. Aero kits are on their way for 2015, but IndyCar has a revised floor that's being readied for testing, and it could come as early as the Indy 500. And a revised floor, I mean, that's not like a little piece.
Yeah, that's a big part of it.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there's all, you know, what this tells me though is, you know, we've got people behind the scenes that are working pretty hard at making sure that these cars do what they need to. You got the Will Phillips and Mr. Walker both.
Can you think of two other guys who would be better in that position than they?
No.
Not really, no.
I'm sure there are people who are more competent. Or shouldn't say more competent, but might be more qualified. But right now, what I'm seeing out of Mr. Walker, I'm very happy with. I mean, he's pushing forward on a lot of things that needed to be pushed forward. Immediately when he came in, we were talking about upgrades in the whole process of you know, race footage and taking care of you know, penalties and everything like that, and making sure that they could properly officiate these races, going as far as obviously observing the F1 race down in Austin and how the FIA handled their monitoring of the race. And I think going forward, we got the right guy in place right there in the competition department. I
Yes.
really do. Other than that, Alan Bestwick is going to take over in the ABC IndyCar booth now that Marty Reed is
Alan, who?
Marty Reed has been sacked. Alan Bestwick.
Wasn't he the
Okay.
guy from what was that show with Kurt Cameron?
What?
No, that was somebody else.
Hmm?
No, I'm thinking some 80s sitcom thing. Who the hell is Alan Bestwick? What's he do?
Okay, Alan Bestwick has been on ABC's, NASCAR coverage.
Oh, okay.
And
no wonder I've never heard of him.
No, wait a second. He's you know that song, One of These Things Is Not Like the Other, One of These Things Does Not Belong, you know?
Mm-hmm. He was the one that didn't belong?
He didn't. He did not like he belonged on that set. I mean, you know, you get the NASCAR announcers and it's lots of yeehaws and Darryl Waltrips and all that kind of stuff. He just didn't seem like he belonged in there to me. I mean, I haven't watched him all that much. I have watched him enough to say that I think it's, you know, he's viable talent. It's not like they're going out and getting Todd Harris.
Okay.
So, but
they could have picked up Sean.
They could have.
That would have made an interesting show.
But it'd be a lot of bleeps.
Can you imagine Sean and Spike on the show?
Perfect. Perfect.
That'll be like
watching Osbournes.
Throw in Robin Miller. Yeah. And a fifth of something.
Oh my god, best Indy 500 broadcast ever.
Nice. Cheever and Foyt, and a fifth of Jack. sorry, Fuzzies.
Yeah, Fuzzies. Nice.
I'm not going gaga over this. I just think looking at it, you know, they went with what they knew. Alan Bestwick was going to stay with the ESPN group, and he's much better, I guess, for them than because he's multi-talented. He came from some other forms of racing and everything and moved up the line. He can do more than just NASCAR, and they're wanting to keep him on staff with ESPN. So they gave him the ABC IndyCar booth because, well, he's your racing reporter.
All right.
And you know,
it is what it is. We'll see how it turns out.
Yeah, I think, just my general impression, I think the IndyCar fan base is going to be much more positive about having him in the booth than some of the yokels they've had there. Marty Reed. Andretti's launching their IndyCar team. They have launched their 2014 team. They're the only team that does, like, a big PR launch.
And I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. You know, it is. It's throwing
a bone to your sponsors.
Indeed. Indeed. And they can make an event out of it because they have four cars and they have a whole lot more to talk about than four IndyCar teams.
They have everything together well in advance. It's Dale Coyne Racing could not do this.
Yes. You know?
They have their unveiling the Wednesday before the St. Petersburg race.
That's very true. I mean, notable, I guess, is the sponsorship on the cars. Marco Andretti's car is going to carry the Snapple sponsorship this year. He's primarily blue and yellow design.
Well, and I'm sure that'll rotate through the various beverages.
Yeah, because he's been Dr. Pepper Snapple for years. Everything from Venom Energy drink being the primary on the car for all year, RC and Dr. Cola. Pepper Tin, and RC Cola was last year. Yeah, they've been all over the place, and it's great to see that sponsor. Tap.
Oh, if they – no, that's Coke. That's Coca-Cola, though. That's Coca-Cola. Oh,
okay.
I tell you what, if they made a Tab-liveried IndyCar diecast, I would buy it.
Yeah. Now, James Hinchcliffe's entry is rather interesting because he's in the players entry this year.
It's got the players color, doesn't it? I think that's perfect for a Canadian guy. I think it's ideal.
So the car carries the United Fiber and Data brand as well as the band Lives logo on the side.
That is awesome.
Yeah, United Fiber and Data is owned by one of the band members from Live, so it makes sense that they're both on the car. But it's kind of cool. It's got a bird spreading its wings in part of the the shield logo for UFD, but it's plastered all the way across the cowl over the cockpit, and then down the side pods are the wings stretching out. Kind of neat.
A little printed circuit board action on the nose too.
Indeed.
Yeah, I think it's a very well done livery. Very well done.
Ryan Hunter Ray is back in the 28. The car looks the same. Nothing to see here. Move along.
Yeah.
Right. And Carlos Munoz is going to be in the AndrettiTV.com number 34 car.
The Sensei Honda.
Okay, whatever. It has big AndrettiTV.com down the side. I guess that means this space for rent.
who was it? Was that HRT, your ad here?
Oh. Most likely.
Wasn't it the ones that did that?
I don't remember that. The only interesting anecdote I can give on this one was I was having a conversation this past week because my in-laws have hosted several exchange students over the years, and one of them was from Colombia, and Kata was in this week at my in-laws' house for past week or so. And I had a good conversation with her, and we talked to her about, yeah, we were rooting for Carlos Munoz at the 500 last year because he's from Colombia. Yeah. And then I told her that the Juan Pablo Montoya number 3 Williams hat that I have that my in-laws bought for me in a store in Bogota. I'm taking that to the autograph session at Mid-Ohio.
Nice. Well done that. Actually, I would encourage you to go to AndrettiTV.com. It is pretty cool. And I think we're going to see this develop throughout the season. They've got a variety of live cams there in their shop, where, of course, right now it's 9 o'clock at night here, 10 o'clock over by you, Mike, yes. And it's all dormant. But they've got live little cams all over the place. You can see them preparing the Indy cars. There's a couple nice shots of Zach Veach's Indy Lights car, the number 26, getting prepped. So. It's kind of cool, and they got at least one feature up right now. Their announcement of the 50 years in auto racing, but I think this could be pretty cool, something to check out throughout the season. It'll be neat to see what they do for an event. If they have some little behind the scenes, little mini documentary things. Following one or more of the drivers or crew around during a race event.
That's kind of cool and everything, but we know that Andretti knows what they're doing, and everybody knows that there are cameras in the shop, so nothing untoward is going to happen. What I really want to see is this take place at Dragon Racing.
or down in Houston at the point nice. Shop. Wait, there goes another laptop flying across the shop.
What, did somebody hire Bobby Knight?
No, anyway. That'd be a chair.
Yes,
AJ's indeed, all about throwing the laptops. They have better aerodynamic characteristics than do.
And a more satisfying crunch at the end.
yes.
Yes. Well, that's pretty much IndyCar for this evening. It's been a long month off, but not a whole lot has happened. I saw an article today, James Jakes talking up his possibilities for 2014, and at this point he has nothing lined up. He's not back with Ray Hall, and at this point, still looking for a ride, and he said he's kind of on the cusp, and he's going to have to make a decision real soon whether he sticks with IndyCar or takes his money to TestCar. So we shall see with him. That said, more to come throughout the week. We are recording on Tuesday night, and, by the time you get this podcast, most likely we're going to hear some other interesting tidbits coming out of IndyCar, and we'll cover them next week. Moving on, though, Mazda Road to Indy. Doug, go.
There's a couple of neat things happening. Of course, we're still looking for more driver announcements and things like that, and I do need to get on the stick and write a summary article about where everybody is right now. The car counts look like they're going to be decent, though. More on that later, but first, the 2015 Indy Lights chassis is continuing to be revised and modified. Not anything major from what we've seen before, or seen, you know, initially, but just some little reprofiling here and there. But what's really interesting to me is that they're going to have a shakedown over in Italy at the Dallara stomping grounds. And then they're going to bring it here to the U.S. to test on some tracks that are on the IndyCar schedule. And we're going to get to see it, Mr. Weitzel, there in May. They're going to have a show car there at the 500. So, you know, hopefully it won't be like the DW12, right? This is almost but entirely unlike what the car is actually going to look like. You know, hopefully it won't be like that. I don't think so, but
hopefully it won't be like the Delta Wing show car they had out there. Because I was standing, I thought it was very cool, and I was on board with the Delta Wing concept. I liked the idea. I didn't like the look of the car, but I liked the idea that they were going for. But I'm standing out there looking at the car, and up walks Will Power, and he just looks so dumbfounded. It was hilarious. It's like, what's this?
You're supposed to turn that?
I will defend the Delta Wing's ability to turn.
Oh, I will
too. Nail. It does it
performs
turn
just fine.
Yeah, exactly. It does. And I would be happy to give anyone who cares to listen to physics lecture on why it will turn.
That's right.
But anyway, the interesting thing about the testing for the Indy Lights 2015 chassis is that Anderson's thinking about holding a test in Europe for interested drivers and team owners. I don't know how many Indy Lights teams are really going to be interested in going flying everything, all their crew, all their equipment over to Europe to do a test. I can imagine a lot of the drivers might be very keen on that.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
But, man, as a team owner, I'm thinking, that's a heck of a lot of money to lay out just for practice.
I'm wondering if what they're thinking is taking a test car, maybe specifically, you know, some of the early chassis, and just having them in Europe and kind of doing an open test day like they do here at the Buckeye Quarter Midget Racing Association.
Gotcha.
They say, come on down, and you can put your kid in one of our cars.
So not a chassis test per se.
Yeah.
Except for, you know, data for the manufacturer. But teams to do driver evaluation.
Teams to do driver evaluation or more even for the series to be scoped by potential drivers.
Okay. I could see that. I could see that.
So Jimmy Bob Jones can't get a seat in GP2. So Jimmy Bob Jones has Company X's money. Company X sends him over to this test, and they all look and see if they're interested.
Yeah. And that makes more sense to me because, you know, thinking Andretti could pull it off, Schmidt could pull it off. You know, someone like, you know, Team Moore, BHA, you know, even Bellardi, are they going to be interested in forking out the money it's going to take to move all their equipment across the pond just for a test? I don't think so. But I like the scenario that you lay out, that, you know, this...
It's an Indy Lights open house.
Yeah,
there you go.
And that makes a lot of sense, and I'd be all for that.
Yeah, so we shall see what they actually use it for, since we're just kind of looking at what Marshall Prutt wrote in his article, and we're not quite sure exactly what it means.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Indy Lights series did have a test down in Sebring. And
speaking of bumpy surfaces that rattle fillings.
Yeah, exactly.
But get this. Do you know how many people tested how many cars, how many drivers they had testing at Sebring?
I do.
10.
That's much better than the 8 cars.
That's double digits, my friend. That's moving the needle. That's a 20% increase.
Nice.
No, in all seriousness, things are looking a bit on the positive side for the Indy Lights series. They've really, really struggled to attract some participants. You know, last year we talked about this a lot and expressed some significant concern. Zach Veach, who, you know, Zach always does really, really well the beginning of the year in testing. He's a testing machine, and he led the testing session at Sebring as well, about 2/10 faster than Gabby Chavez. And Gabby, who had been with Schmidt, and I always thought very highly of Chavez. I think he's a fantastic racer. He is now with Bilardi Auto Racing in the number 5 car that Peter Dempsey ran last year. I again think Bilardi's going to be right up there fighting it out with Andretti and Schmidt. Matthew Brabham was third, also with Andretti. And then a bunch of people that are kind of getting their feet wet in the car and testing things out. Vittorio Gerelli was testing with Andretti Autosport. It'd be interesting if they actually field a third core. I guess car. I guess if Vittorio, I haven't had enough gin. It's a problem.
I was gonna say, you have another drink?
not yet. I'll get one here in a second. Vittorio, if he brings enough cash, I'm sure they will. But I think that's really going to be the deciding factor: how much personal sponsorship is he bringing to the party. Luis Razia had tested with Schmidt Peterson. You know, no one has really come out with Schmidt Peterson as really appearing like a front runner. I mean, we have Luis Razia, we have Juan Pedrajeda. Juan had been a perennial with JDC Motorsport, and he's a fine driver. He's had some nice finishes, but he's not that pinnacle driver that you're used to seeing at Schmidt, right? And lastly, Jack Harvey, which I believe Jack is fully signed on with Schmidt. I think that's signed and sealed. Alex Barron with Bilardi Auto Racing. Scott Anderson, who's a fine driver, but with Panforce United, they got a lot of catching up to do. They were over a second behind Zach Veach's time. And this is a little bit, perhaps, Anderson being unfamiliar with the Indy Lights chassis. But I also think it's a lot of Panforce United, you know, needing to really come up to speed on the engineering side of things to prepare for a full season run. They've not been full season in Indy Lights for a couple seasons now, right? And you know, it's one of those things. Sure, you still have the data, but you still have all the talent that you used to have. You know, people come and go, putting the band back together as they're doing is tough. And so, you know, they're going to have some things to shake down first. And finally, Lloyd Reed with Brian Herta Autosport. Some people that are obviously missing are Team More Racing. And they'll likely be bringing two cars, Zach Meyer, of course, in one. And they plan on testing Raul Owens, they were not able to make an appearance at Sebring. So we're already looking at probably 12 entries, and I can see it growing to maybe 13, 14 if everything falls out right. I think you're looking at high teens, perhaps for the Carb Day event, the Freedom 100, especially if Team E comes up and fields a car again. So that's all I have for the Monster Road to Indy for right now. We'll have more as we start getting into Winterfest coming up here pretty soon.
Oh, very cool. So that wraps up our American Open Wheel section of the podcast, and now we turn it over to the gritty, dirty, icy, snowy side of the podcast. In all conditions, in all weather, and with the light bar on the front, we bring you Mike Shaw.
That's right. There is no season, you know, really for rally, right? I mean, it can do it in any weather, in any location, and that's what makes it great. But we'll fire things off this evening with a little look at the Dakar. The Dakar Rally is, you guys normally say it's the one that starts off the season. There's another one I'll talk about later, the Jana Rally that happens in Austria that actually takes off a little bit before it. But the Dakar Rally is the grittiest, toughest rally on the planet. It takes place in South America, and as you said, the most recent stage that they did is in that super hot, the Atacama Desert. There isn't a drier place on Earth, unless maybe you're sitting in the middle of the Mojave Desert or something like that. It's pretty darn desolate out there. So sandy, dirty, all kinds of stuff. And it goes on for 2 weeks, covering thousands of miles. So you just don't get a longer rally. So the American hopeful, I guess you could say, Robbie Gordon, he's always flamboyant, and of course was very optimistic about his chances this year. He's had some tough luck. He was in the Hummer last year. Well, actually he's been in Hummer last 2 years. The first time he was out, he was, teamed up with, Nasser Al-Attiyah, and they got into a kerfuffle between the two, and, you know, the car, they had some issues. Last year, he rolled it halfway through. This year, didn't even do very well on the first stage. The first two stages, actually, first 2 days, they had issues with vapor lock. Even though Robbie Gordon was saying the car that he's got now, it's not a Hummer, but it looks like one. Sorry. Is that better?
Yeah, it's not clicking. Now. I don't know. You know, when you're probably moving around, it's making some.
I think that's what it is. This stupid stuff. Stupid thing here. I hate it. The cord's too big and it clicks. All right, I'll just try and hold it then. One, cool. Two, three. So Robbie Gordon said this year he's in the most advanced vehicle that he's ever built. It's a V8-powered HST Gordini SUV sitting on giant Toyo tires, which is its key sponsor. But, you know, it's basically one of his super trucks, super stadium trucks that he races that's been modified to do Dakar. Mm. And like I was saying, he ended up having vapor lock issues on the first 2 days. Just between the high heat and something with how they had the fuel system going, they just kept running into vapor lock, and they didn't get that fixed until a couple days into it. But he's hours back. He's been trying to claw his way back more recently, but yeah, he's not really a contender for the win. Once again, it's these darn little minis, these Rally Raid minis, that are based kind of on the Mini Countryman, but also kind of on like the BMW, like M5 or X3 or X5 or whatever, that their little SUV.
Yeah, I think it's the
X5. So, the yeah. X5, yeah.
Yeah, X5. So it's kind of based on that. Anyhow, Nanny Roma and Petter Hansel, Stefan Petter Hansel, are the two that have always been duking it out really for the win the last few seasons. And once again at the top, see, we just finished stage 9 today. It's Nanny Roma's in the lead with Stefan Petter Hansel right behind him. They're separated by a mere 12 minutes, which that actually isn't much when you're talking about thousands of miles of rally over multiple days. Two-time WRC champion Carlos Sainz is in it as well, but he's a good 3 hours back. So are a number of drivers. Nasser Al-Attiyah is still in it. He's actually in the mini this time. He's an hour back. A lot of these guys that happened to this on special state are on the stage six. They ran into where they couldn't find one of the markers. Yeah, you have to get close to these certain GPS markers along the route at these waypoints. They couldn't find it, and a number of them said, "You know what? If we can't find it, maybe none of the other guys are, and they'll just wave it." And so they just ended up going after not, you know, keep on going if they can't find it in like 10, 15 minutes. And so, unfortunately, a couple of guys did find it, which meant they got an hour penalty tagged onto them.
Oof.
Yeah. That doesn't kill you completely, because all it takes is one person getting a flat and you end up catching up, at least over a couple of days. So, you know, there's still some left in it, but really the two to watch are going to be Nani Roma and Stefan Patterhansel in the big, gigantic trucks, which are just awesome to watch. It's always between the Russians and the Kamaz trucks and the Norwegian guys, I think it is, or Netherlands guys in the Iveco. There's these gigantic Russian-style trucks that go across. Have you ever seen, like, those military trucks?
Yeah, I love watching those rally raid trucks. Those are amazing machines. We were having this discussion earlier today on the Kansas City Region SCCA forum, and those are amazing, amazing machines. I wondered, you know, what I guess that would be a prepared all-wheel drive class if I put it in a rallycross.
I guess.
I think those vehicles are what you want to be able to drive after the apocalypse.
Yes.
With access to lots of gas stations, of course.
And you know, when you see them bouncing along the giant sand dunes, you just think Mad Max.
Yep.
That's true. It's entirely that.
Yep. Well, and you know, they're diesel powered, right?
Yep.
And so, biodiesel, you get veggie oil and there you go. You don't need man amounts of petroleum.
Let's see here. This moving on, I'm going to talk about just real quick about the motorbikes, because, man, let me tell you, to do that many miles on a motorcycle, those guys are just amazing. They really are. That's got to be the hardest darn thing. And once again, it's Mark Coma versus Cyril Dupre. These two guys have been battling it out over a decade of of Dakars, just back and forth winning the events. Cyril Dupre, though, ended up having an issue, and he ends up being – he's like 2 hours back right now. But Mark Coma's in the lead, but his lead is actually pretty narrow. It's only 15 minutes ahead of this young Spaniard that's been kind of the up-and-coming guy for Honda. Yeah, his name's Breda Bort, and that guy's been doing pretty well. So maybe we'll have an upset this year, but – we're only halfway through it. There's still a few more stages left. It ends this weekend. So 2 weeks of grueling racing. The next the remaining stages move over to the coastline of Peru, and they're going to be racing along a lot of the beaches and the sands of the coastline. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. So moving on in the rally world, we have a little bit of announcement from Andretti Autosport, which maybe those live cams will show something a little bit new there. A little global rallycross news. Turns out Andretti Autosport is going to be doing GRC with Volkswagen.
Hmm.
That's right.
Really?
Volkswagen wants to get into the global rallycross. You know, you got the TV coverage. And there have been a couple of, Paul Eklund? From Europe, brought over his VW Polo, I think it is. It's like a Golf over here, and did run it, I think, in one event, maybe two. So now they've actually got a deal with Andretti. I don't know who the drivers are going to be yet, but...
Well, that was going to be my next question, is who the drivers were.
Marco.
That would be a bad idea.
No, I'm not joking. I am not joking. I think that if they're doing global rallycross, I think there might be a bit of Marco wants to give it a try there.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be just him. It would be a seasoned rallycross person or personality who has experience along with him.
But Marco would bring that name recognition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people might not recognize his first name, except, you know, those of us who are around IndyCar. But certainly his last name brings lots of recognition power, right?
Yes.
And so I think that could be pretty epic.
Well, apparently the official reveal will be at the Chicago Auto Show February 6th. They're going to release who the drivers are going to be. I believe it's a two-car team that they're going to have, so that'll be cool to see that. I'm actually pretty excited. I've had my reservations with GRC, but I think it's got some growth potential if they can get the tracks figured out. This whole kind of Mickey Mouse Lego set way of putting together tracks has not worked well for them. So once they improve that, I think we can have some good racing. Yeah. Now to the news that's made a little bit of a stink on the website. Let's talk a little Rally America, shall we?
You mean stirred up a bloody hornet's nest.
That would be fair to say.
I think you've done it, sir.
So first of all, I posted an article that said, you know, the title was Rally America, Serious Problems Ahead. Now, the reason why I use that title, and a lot of people didn't get it because they probably don't follow all these different series I do, especially the people that drive in it. They're busy preparing their car. There's actually a tagline that came up last year when the European Rally Championship replaced the Intercontinental Rally Challenge, as it used to be called, with Serious Competition Ahead. So I did a little play on words. It's like, okay, I kept hearing about all these different teams that were and drivers that were dropping out of the national championship with Rally America, saying, I'm sorry, we can't do the whole season, or, you know, there's no way we're going to be able to do it anymore. And it's just one after another. And I'm just like, what's going on here? You know, the first one to announce that I heard about was from Australian Brendan Reeves. And I'm like, okay, well, that makes sense. He's back home in Australia. You know, he had to kind of fund his own way. They were selling Bonnet, you know, name people could have their name for 50 or 100 bucks on the car to try and afford their way through Rally America. And they were able to do it and won the championship. But they won it by the skin of their teeth over a factory team, though, of the Scion team. And I'm like, okay, well, that makes sense. He's going to go back home and he's going to rally out of Australia and do that season. But then I kept hearing other things. The guys over at Nameless Performance, they had previously promised the entire the GT86 that they built, which is just an awesome looking car. And I want to see it so bad.
I was really excited about this project too.
Yeah, they said they're going to run the entire 2014 season. They're going to run a couple of tests, you know, with Rally America at first, and then they're going to have the entire 2014 season. And then I got Will Order said, I'm going to be over at Snowdrift. I'm like, cool, I can't wait to see pictures of that GT86 on the stage. It's like, yeah, no. I'm actually going to be here just in support of FY Racing. Oh, okay, well, it's great that you're supporting another team. What happened? Yeah, you're probably not going to see the GT86 out on the stages. It's just not going to happen. I'm like, something wrong with the car? And he said there's a number of things going on, but mainly a lot of it has to do with cost and sponsor issues with Rally America.
Hmm.
So that got me to even then, you know, paying attention to even more what was going on. David Sterix, who had just won the Super Production Championship, said that he's not going to be running this season. So we got all these people that are no longer defending their title. Obviously, Subaru is staying in it. I mean, it's they almost help run the series. You know, they've got a huge manufacturer support there, and they also have a great contingency program for other teams. You know, that win using Subaru cars. So I mean, that's good. But then I also saw Mason Moyle, who was second in Super Production, put up his car that he's used the last 4 years, his Subaru, up for sale. It was posted on Instagram and Twitter. He's like, you know, I've got a car that it's never broken down on me. Been using it the last 4 seasons. It's up for sale now. It's like, okay, that's interesting. It just one after another, hearing all these different stories. And, of course, the Hoonigan himself, Ken Block, said that he's only going to be able to do probably 4 rounds.
Well, and that, you know, that makes
sense.
That one
made a little more sense, too, because of the schedule conflicts, right?
Right, right. You know, Sturt and Moyle especially, when I saw that their car was for sale, I'm like, ooh, they're getting a new car. And, oh, no.
Not so much.
Not as such. Oh, because I got really excited, and I sent the link to Sean. It's like, hey, here, pick it up. This is it. You know, Team Wolf and Paddock, this is our start. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, and it could be that Mason will eventually get another car or whatever, but what I noticed was is there wasn't a to-be-determined entry into Snowdrift. You know, looking at the entry list, I'm not seeing him there. So he's selling his car, and he's not on Snowdrift, and Snowdrift is an event he's always done well at, and he's always raced. So to me, I'm like going, okay, so that also tells me that there's something that's up. So anyways, you know, I wrote this article with intentionally vague, and it was mostly talking about how it's interesting that all these people are dropping out. You know, what's happening? How did Rally America go from such a promising-looking future to a series that so many have deserted? I mean, I know that Rally is very expensive and it's hard to fund, but has Rally America made it to the point of being completely unattainable? That was kind of the question I was wondering. And you know, my title was slightly wrong. It should have had a question mark at the end of it. But what I said made good sense. And of course, the first thing that you get the people that are like, dude, stop with the doom and gloom, right? You're going to get people that are going to be like, you know, Rally's going to be just fine. Stop it. You're just going to be in a downer on the sport. Well, I love the damn sport.
Well, okay? And Rally is going to be around. It's who's going to be saying
and I made a specific point of that.
Rally isn't going anywhere.
Some of these people, I'm wondering if they actually read the last paragraph. Because the last paragraph, I say specifically, okay, even though it doesn't seem like there's going to be a lot of national entries, because we will have some national entries. Obviously, we've got Subaru Rally Team USA's in there. We've got Dylan Van Way is going to do Super Production. He's in his Vermont sports car, Subaru now. And, you know, we'll have Scion and ACP doing, they're going to continue their program into 2014 for the two-wheel drive championship.
Ron May's coming back, right?
What's that?
Ronna May is coming back in.
I haven't heard. I think she probably will, but I'm not 100% certain.
Okay.
I have not seen one way or the other from her, and I've been just kind of posing the question out there: who's doing it and who isn't? I did just receive more recent word that Rhiannon Gelsomino now, who used to co-drive for her brother Brendan Reeves, is going to be co-driving for – oh, dang it. Now I just lost his name. You know, there are still going to be other entries in Rally. Like I said, Subaru is going to be in there. We've got ACP is still going to be there with the Scion team. We're going to have in Super Production, Dylan Van Way is going to be doing the whole season. He's in a Subaru now. And I also heard from Rhiannon Gelsomino, who's going to be co-driving for Nick Roberts, who was a 2013 Rookie of the Year. He's got a Super Production Subaru that he's going to be driving. It's kind of under wraps, but he hasn't shown off his livery yet. But if I remember right, it was like the 2013 sedan-looking car with the big wing. So, you know, there'll still be people out there doing it, but it's just going to be not nearly as many doing the championship side. That's kind of what I was wondering. It's like, okay, so what's the deal here? Are everybody just going to do regional and whatnot? And like I was saying just a second ago, is that the regional rallies are going to stay healthy. The number of entries there never seems to drop very much. Those are a lot more affordable. And I think Rally America might be making just the costs for a national entry just a little too extreme to make it worthwhile for people. So we got a number of different responses to this article. And, you know, like I was saying before, there was the people that were saying, boo-boo, you know, stop harping on Rally America. You're just a hater. No, I'm not. And then you get the people that are saying that NASA all the way. It's all about, you know, NASA's the only type of the only sanctioned body you should ever go with. It seemed almost like we were getting a little bit of the East Coast, West Coast kind of thing going on there. And that's kind of justified because out here on the West Coast, the Olympus Rally got screwed by Rally America. And there's a lot of people pissed from that.
You know what this really reminds me of, though? It reminds me of the Champ Car, IndyCar, you know, IRL bickering, and a lot of the language that's being used reminds me a lot of what you see in a lot of you know, online IndyCar discussions, whether it's on Twitter or track forum or wherever else, you know, on Facebook, various places, you know, this that the curmudgeons. That, oh, nothing's ever right. And then the rosy-eyed or rosy-spectacled people that nothing's ever wrong and well, we like this sanctioning body. Well, we like this sanctioning body. Well, I guess the lesson here is just people are people, right?
People are people, and, you know, obviously they've got their reasons. you know, like I said, on the West Coast here, there's the issue with Olympus. There was the huge cost increase over the last few years with Rally America. And, you know, one of the other responses I got, you know, I heard from Chris Duplessis and the guys from Nameless, Jason Griffith of Nameless Performance was specifically saying that, you know, they actually had a sponsor that would help fund their entire season.
Yeah.
But because of Rally America's fee that they charge to have your own personal media person, if you want to have your own personal photographer out there and whatnot, they charge some insane amount. I don't remember what the dollar amount is, but Chris Duplessis had said it's something similar.
That doesn't surprise me, and, you know, there's...
But their sponsor needs this person,
right?
Well,
they do.
Sponsor's like, you know what?
Well, yes and no. I mean, here's the deal. Is that you know, even in IndyCar and a lot of the Indy Lights teams, you'll have the PR person maybe there on pit lane and you know, at least when you know, not during the race, but you'll have these people around and they'll have their little point and shoots, be taking pictures, but by and large they are not always professional motorsports photographers,
right?
And in, especially in light of the on-stage incident that happened earlier, you know, Ananda and Rally America have really been cracking down on who is out there on stage, and they want to make sure that whoever's out there is a legitimate media-based motorsports photographer. And so I understand the team's frustrations with this, but I'm going to side with Rally America on this, and that promotional photographers aren't always, you know, fully qualified, you know, but I shouldn't say fully qualified. They're not always the type of photographers and shooters that are used to being there next to the action in harm's way with an understanding of what to do in those situations. You know, I've seen some sketchy things in IndyCar races where PR people have kind of snuck their way into places where they shouldn't have been and doing some pretty sketchy things. And, you know, some of the other, you know, the series photographers were like, hey, you know, get your butt out of here and knock this off. You know, in a rally on a stage, it's harder to do that, you know, since it's so much more spread out.
Yeah.
You can't keep an eye on everyone like that.
And I understand your viewpoint on that, but I think it goes beyond the safety and the experience of the Photog. It's the fee that they're charging for. When I talked to Chris Duplessis last year on it, he mentioned a number like $10,000.
Well,
to have the own person.
It was $1,000 or so
per event.
Per event per person.
Per person, that's what it
per
was.
Person,
yes,
per person, per event.
So you have two people. It's $2,000 per event.
Yeah.
To have, let's say, one video guy and one camera guy, I guess.
Yeah.
And just that just seems extreme to me, especially when these guys, like when you talk about the guys at Nameless Performance, they're already spending, you know, $6,000 or $8,000 just hauling their damn crap halfway across the country because it's only one West Coast event.
And you know, the money thing. You know, if you're not going to allow it, just say you're not going to allow it and be done with it. But, you know, asking for an indulgence like that is a little sketch. I will totally agree with you there. You know, if you need those PR shots, then, you know, what you do is you purchase them from the media outlets. You arrange a relationship with one of the media outlets and say, you know, we'd love to use your images and pay the licensing fee or whatever else, but which probably would come out to be the same money. But, you know, for something like Rally where you don't have TV coverage, you know, so you don't have necessarily a lot of proper media out there covering the thing. You don't always have that as a good, viable option. You know, there's a lot of great photographers that follow around Rally America. Scott Raines, for example. Or
Josh Tons has taken some amazing
pictures. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Josh is fantastic, you know.
And I took a couple of good shots.
But anyway.
Anyway,
so, but it, you know what I mean. It's not an easy situation. I understand Duplessis' frustration. I really do. But I also understand the series.
You know, I heard about from about four or five different others that said the same exact story that, you know, it was three times as much as an original entry fee. You know, national team will spend nearly $2,000 on every entry. And then you have to buy a photo for $100 from Rally America to supply to your sponsors. And that's kind of what you're stuck with. And that was actually coming from Evan Klein, who you've probably seen out on the stages as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
this car.
Yeah, exactly. So, like I said... Yes, the cost is pretty high, and for me, what's frustrating is I think Rally America should try and encourage more media instead of charging this high amount and discouraging it. Especially we're on the cusp of this growth, in my opinion, and I'll get into that in just a second. But one of the things that I think actually was said best was probably from both. Matt Johnston and ACP, who did comment on the site after that article. And, you know, Matt Johnston said that, you know what, back in 2007 to 2009, things were just coming along in Rally America great. They actually had, I think they even had a short TV spot at the time back then. And it was really good coverage. And they were thinking, wow, this is going to be great. And Matt Johnston had actually told, John Buffum that, you know, things are just going to keep growing and we're going to have just this bust out year. And old John Buffum's so experienced on it, so he's like, yeah, just wait, it'll drop back down again because, you know, it's just the nature of the sport.
Right.
With all motorsports, you have people that, you know, they can only continue for so long until the money runs out and then they're gone. And then somebody comes up and they replace them. And ACP said something similar. It is kind of an ebb and flow of the sport, and I understand that. But I think Rally America could have a more viable national championship if they tried to encourage things better. I mean, maybe some sort of ladder system could be created to make it more affordable, you know, like they do in the bigger championships in other countries. I don't know. But obviously, a lot of these guys are saying, look, we have sponsors, and we would love to be able to utilize that to help pay for it. But when it's a Rally America event, we just can't get that. We can't afford it. So,
you know, to move up to the next bit, you really do need a 30-minute, 60-minute highlight show, even if it's on MAV TV.
Actually, you made a great comment too. Exactly.
You gotta get it out there. You know, so when sponsors say, "Well, where can we see this? You know, where can we watch this?" You know, right now you say, "Well, you can't," and they're like,
"It's
so,
on the internet." There's YouTube videos.
So, you know, basically you're saying, all right, your ad on the side of my car is going to be seen by maybe
tens of people.
Yeah, a couple of thousand beard up rednecks.
and for them, I guess, you know, the one thing that is of most value to them is people that are the gearheads that are in the paddock that see it, right? These are car people. Mm-hmm. But that's about it. They're not going to get it right, the big publicity. The TV thing though, I can't understand why Rally America doesn't quite have a deal yet. Like you had stated, we've got MAV TV, we've got Velocity. These are these little offshoot channels that have nothing but repeat of these reality TV type motorsports stuff, right? So why don't we throw in just a 30-minute spot in there, even just a little overview? I think it would work quite well. And the reason why I think that they were on the cusp of something is because now we've got some more national attention coming to us with the fact that, big news, Travis Pastrana is officially coming back to Rally America, and he will be in Super Rally Team USA along David Higgins.
Nice. Now my nice blue SRT USA t-shirt that has the $199 on the back of it.
You can wear it again?
I can get a new one. I'm excited.
I'm very happy to see Travis Pastrana back. But in the open class, I mean, you pretty much have FY Racing and their older Subaru with Adam Yeoman. And you've got David Higgins. And you've got Travis Pastrana. And that's it. At least so far.
Ken Block at selected events.
Yeah, Ken Block at selected events, but not, you know, really saying that he's going to challenge for the title. And then you've got Antoine Lestage so far is going to be doing Snowdrift in his Evo. Here's the thing that I find interesting, though. I've seen what Travis Pastrana is wearing. He's got Red Bull all over him. So if he's got Red Bull and Antoine Lestage is Rockstar and Ken Block is Monster Energy, why the hell aren't they doing a full championship? All of them. I mean, these are these energy drinks that always fight against each other, right?
I think your answer kind of goes back to the whole media exposure thing. If there were the media exposure for Rally America, they would stage it on these grounds. But what they have to end up staging it on, and you know, we talked about this before the show, is Gymkhana videos. And who can outdo the other guys with a great video that hits the internet? Because unfortunately, that's where the exposure is. That's where the eyeballs are. On Rally America.
It's kind of a build it and they will come thing, though. At least I think it could be. Because if you did have all three, right, the potential's there. If you had all three of them running the championship in a state of close battle all the way through, eyes would start looking that way. Plus, you have crossover. We already know Pastrana has already stated he's going to do both the GRC with Subaru as well as doing Rally America. Mm-hmm. Ken Block is already slated to do the GRC as well with a few Rally America events. The only reason why Block won't be able to do all the GRC or all the Rally America events is, I think, because of his Gymkhana grid stuff. which is another little mini championship thing that he's kind of done separate from the GRC.
Yes. Okay.
So, you know, him and his X Games-ish stuff that he's kind of put together. I had high hopes that there would be more, you know, in the open class there. I'd love to see all three, Lestage versus Pastrana versus Block versus Higgins, actually four duking it out. And really, as far as full championship goes, it looks like it's going to be just Higgins versus Pastrana in the same team. But that doesn't mean that they won't battle. That's for sure.
That could be lots of fun. I think definitely Higgins has the upper hand on that one, but we shall see.
Yeah, so that's it for Rally America news. And yeah, sorry people, I didn't mean to piss you all off. I was, but yeah, the reality is things could be a little bit better, and we're just we're all hopeful that something does improve. I did want to say one last thing about that though is, you know, like I said, the regional rallies are going to do just fine. And more specifically, over here on the West Coast, and I did post something on our website about it, they're actually doing a regional championship. I had mentioned this many months ago, actually last year, in fact. There was this rumor of this thing called the Cascadia International Rally Championship. And the reason why it's international is because it's going to consume some of the Western Canadian events as well. It'll be Oregon Trail Rally, which is the Rally America / regional event. It'll have Olympus in there. It'll have the Rally of the Tall Pines, I think it is, okay. Which is in British Columbia. And I think is the Rocky Mountain Rally, which is up outside of Calgary-ish or something like that. And a couple other like regional ones. But it basically it's going to stay on the western half of the U.S. here, and they're going to combine all those together into being the Cascadia Cup. And that'll be neat to see how that goes. But obviously, it's going through multiple different sanctioning bodies, being Canada and U.S. and whatnot. But it's nice to see something hopefully grow out of that, especially on the West Coast side, where, again, as we mentioned, Rally America comes over here for one event and one event only. Mm. So moving on to WRC. In the WRC, we have Monte Carlo coming. The full Monte. I know.
Is it Bluetooth enabled?
Ew.
Monte Carlo, though. What's wonderful about the Monte Carlo is that it has the best changing conditions of any event. You know, it's in the winter time. You're starting down in the low valley, and you're climbing up the mountains, you know, on these asphalt roads into the snow and ice, and then coming back down again, all on the same stage. So it is a huge, huge gamble on what tires you use. And whoever gets the tire choice right is probably going to win this event. Although it's hard to bet against the Volkswagens, especially Sebastian Ogier. Hyundai will be making their debut, which is awesome. Thierry Neuville, I mean, he's freaking amazing. He's the only one that's been up there and able to challenge, along with Danny Sordo, who's also on that, who's on the Hyundai team. So that'll be great to watch. The weather is going to be looking mostly wet for the event, except for Saturday. It looks like they have incoming snow. So they got to figure out what they're going to do from day to day. And, of course, on the final day, so this takes place Thursday all the way through Sunday. The final day will have the famous Col de Trini, which is the steepest mountain that they get to climb, and it ends at night. So it'll be a night stage for the final stage of the event, going up into the snow and ice, and then traveling back down again. So it's just epic. So who do you guys think would win?
Volkswagen.
I honestly don't know. I'm really, really impressed with how Kubica has been doing so far, though.
Yeah. I've actually got a little bit more I'm going to say specifically about Kubica here in just a little bit. But yeah, Kubica's just a phenom. He's yeah, I don't even know where to start with him. He's just
he's the awesome. That's where you start.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess I might as well just kind of dovetail into that right now. So Kubica, he started out doing that Janner rally, which is the first rally of the year. It stands for January, is what Janner means. It's Austria. And he went there as just a test. He'd never driven the Ford Fiesta before. He was in Citroënal last year, right? So it's a Fiesta RRC, which is basically a restricted WRC car. It's got more bigger restrictor on the turbo. And he goes up there, never driven in those conditions, never driven that event before, never driven on studs before, at least racing. You know, I don't know what he's done at home in Poland. And he wins the damn event against guys that have been multi-year champions of that event and know it very, very well. The guy is just crazy. He ended up going out on that final stage, which was, he won it in the final stage, which was what's so amazing. He goes out there. He's got studded tires on the front because they ran out of, they only had like a slick tire that was a soft compound. And then they had a studded tires. Well, they pulled the studs out on two of the tires. He left the studs in on the front too. So he had front studs and rear on the back. Didn't have anything. It turned out the stage was just wet. So he pulls over before the stage starts, does this cross pattern where diagonally the front right is a stud and the rear left is a stud. And he decides what he's going to do is he's going to just burn those studs off as much as he can in the first few kilometers. And then, you know, utilize that to hopefully just have a winter tire for the rest of it. Because he didn't have just a winter tire without studs. Halfway through the stage, he ends up knocking a snow pole, those little things that line the side of the road, and it knocks into the light pod, turning one of the lights into his face. So now he's got a light pod shining in his face while he's trying to navigate, you know, down these dark roads. And all of a sudden, you know, it kind of goes out of the way. Then it's back in his face again. He tries to find a way to turn off the light on it, but he doesn't know the car. The light switch to turn off the light pod, he can't find it. Eventually, he finds it looking down at the wheel and misses his face note, goes way off into a field, and comes back on, just missing a building. There's a great YouTube video. If actually you go to my article about Kubica that's on the website, it's one of the guys put in a comment. There's a link to the YouTube video of the stage. And the guy wins the thing by 30 seconds still over Yaklov Pesh, who's a multi-champion of the event in years past. Beats him by 30 seconds, and yet he still had an off. The guy is freaking quick.
Very
cool. You
guys
still there? Okay.
Sorry, oh, there silent. It is. My I'm sitting here talking up a storm into my muted microphone.
Are you still there? Yeah.
Yeah. Just Doug's my brain ain't gone. But anyway, yeah, you know, that performance was amazing. And, you know, we've seen his adaptability in Formula One. But in rally, you know, that skill really just comes to the fore. And, man, I'm looking forward to seeing how he does this season. I really have hugely high hopes for him.
And what's scary is that was only a test, you know, to have him do that well in what was considered only a test. It is just mind boggling.
It is practice.
yeah. So, you know, considering the conditions and stuff like that, anything can happen at Monty and, yeah, Kubica's got to be in. I'm saying he's going to get a top five at least in that event. It's hard not to say that just Ogier is going to win. Actually, I have pretty high hopes. If it's actually gets really slippery, I think that's where Hirvonen can actually do really well. He's always good in that Fiesta. He didn't do well with the Citroen, but the Fiesta feels good to him. It's more been designed around him anyway, and his driving style. So I think he probably get maybe up to a third place. Yari Matty, do you think he'll wreck or do you think he'll finish?
Flip a coin. If he finishes, yeah, he'll finish well. If he wrecks, it'll be epic.
Fair enough, fair enough. I think Thierry Neuville will finish. Sordo,
I think he's one of your top fivers.
Yeah, I think so too. Sordo, Sordo's happy to have a job, so I think he'll finish, but he'll be careful.
He'll bring the car home.
He's not going to push it. Yeah, I think he's going to be the one to bring the car home no matter what, with Hyundai. So I think both Hyundais will finish, and they're going to be using it as an extended test. So I don't think they'll push it too hard. And Mads Osberg and Citroen, he's going to biff it.
Yep.
Something's going to happen. He's going to
push too hard. He's going to be too eager for it.
Yep. Chris Meek over at Citroen. He binned it quite a bit last year,
really,
but I think he'll be more careful this year.
Yeah, I don't have a good feel for that.
Yeah, you know, I think Tarmac's is better surface, though. So I'm gonna say Chris Meek will be up there in the. I'll give him actually a top three.
No. Hang on. Okay, I buy the Tarmac thing, but what happens at altitude? Is it still tarmac-ish? You know, once you have snow and ice over the road, do the same skills apply? I don't think so.
You're right. The same skills don't exactly apply, and that's usually where someone like Mads Osberg would really be good, right? Because you know, from where they are in Norway, you know, there's definitely a lot of snow and ice. They do all that ice driving.
Yeah.
You know, they go on those frozen lakes and stuff. And then there's Andreas Mikkelsen, who's also with Volkswagen, kind of the guy that was playing it careful last year, just getting to know all the events. He's now able to push as much as he wants. I'd say he's probably up there in that top five, too. Man, it's really kind of anybody's guess. Either way, it's going to be an awesome event. Tune in. There'll be WRC Live. We'll be covering the event, of course, starting on Thursday. Obviously, we're talking about time that is European time. What's really cool is WRC.com did just update their website. So we're not the only ones with a fresh look. WRC.com just released this morning their new version of their website. And it's definitely much more mobile friendly, and I hope that the WRC Live, which is the streaming part for the audio, ends up working better with mobile devices, because I'll be listening in the middle of the night.
I will say the aesthetics of the website didn't really change all that much. It really has the same design cues as the previous site, but it is much snappier and, like you said, mobile friendly. And it looks a little cleaner. It's less jaggy and janky, but a lot of the same design cues. So very cool.
Well, thank you. Oh, never mind.
Yeah.
Are you talking about me?
Yes, the site redesign did for us looks very good as well. Thank you, Doug.
Oh, you're welcome.
Other quick notes. WRC also has a bunch of TV deals going on right now. So this is going to kind of dovetail into a separate little topic, but right now they've got a deal with this, BTV, which is BT Sport TV, which is over there in the UK. And it's a pay-per-view type of service, but they're going to show live coverage. There's also going to be live coverage in France. And then in addition to that, there's actually going to be every evening there's going to be an update that they're going to be doing to Motors TV that actually Bex Williams and Colin Clark, our friend of the show, will actually be doing little dailies. They won't be live, but they'll be doing coverage of those dailies every evening for the event. So obviously we're not going to get it here in the U.S. like we would like, but keep an eye on YouTube for somebody to hack it and post it on there. Now, what this kind of dovetails into that I find interesting is the fact that the M Sport finally showed off their new livery, and Interestingly, there's no major sponsor on there. You see the EcoBoost, you see the Castrol, you know, that they've always had to sponsor. Mostly just big N-Score. The delivery looks beautiful, by the way. It's the best looking one of all the teams, in my opinion. I think it looks very elegant. But the fact that there's no major sponsor on there is kind of curious. But then they're at the Autosport Motor Show that's done in the UK. And Colin Clark actually happened to be there checking it out and ran into one Gerard Quinn. Do you guys remember Gerard Quinn, who is the head of Ford Motorsport WRC?
Who?
Yeah, no.
Gerard Quinn?
Sorry, no, I don't recognize the name.
Gerard, yeah, he's the one that was the Ford WRC head guy from the Ford side. And he's been keeping close tabs on what's been going on with the WRC. And when they left, their issue was the media coverage. Media coverage was a big problem because we had the big implosion with the Russian mafia guy that had the previous North One Sport that was handling all the media. And they lost all their TV deals. There is this huge, kerfuffle about that. And they had to start from scratch. And Ford's like, you know what? If we're not going to be on TV, it's not worth it for us. We got to pull out. Throw in bad economy on top of it. It wasn't a fun time. So Ford, the fact that there's no sponsor on this car makes me think that Ford is about to make a deal, maybe not for this year, but for 2015, but going to commit to it sometime during this year. There's an interview that's coming up as a podcast that Colin Clark did with Gerard Quinn. That'll be on WRC.com, but it's not up on the site yet. Hopefully it'll be there soon, and we'll get a little more information.
So the plot thickens.
Yes. I would love to have an official Ford-backed team out there. And like I said in that other article that I posted, you know what? I think Ford or M Sport is the manufacturing champion when it comes to rally cars out there. You look at any of the events, what brand of car, as far as customer cars, are out there the most? They may not be the manufacturer's champion as far as the WRC is concerned, but as an example, there's going to be 17 cars at Sweden that are already entered. 10 of them are Ford Fiestas. Then there's two of the Hyundais, three Volkswagens, and two Citroens. The rest are all Ford Fiestas. So they definitely know what they're doing when it comes to building a good car. And they're also the first ones to have an R5 out there. So Ford's got their name out there. It just would be nice to have the official backing of the manufacturer instead of it just being M Sport. All right, we can move on now. Sorry for the long. There's a lot of stuff that happened in Rally, guys.
Well, matter of fact, Rally's pretty much the only championship that is, close to being operational, other than the Test Car Series coming up.
Well, that's the funny thing. I'm mentioning to some other motorsports friends of mine, who's like, "Oh, the off season sucks," and I'm like, "I'm a Rally fan. What off season?"
Yeah,
we got the Dakar that isn't in Dakar, although they raced Dakar. we've got that going on right now. I guess off season is what December. Give us our Christmas break and then have at it again. And it's like, what is this off season of which you speak?
Yeah.
There is no such off season for Rally.
No.
Ah, fun. So that moves us into a brief bit of sports car news. The roar before the 24 testing for the I have no idea how to really acronymize the
Tusk
Car Series. the Tudor United Sports Car Championship Auto Racing Teams North America, whatever.
Yeah, they need to come up with a better
style
name.
Style book?
One, yeah, well, that too. They come up with a name that rolls off the tongue with a little bit more fluidity.
Yeah.
Because, you know, how are you going to talk about Continental Tire Series? You know, you look at that acronym, you're like, Vanna, can I buy a vowel?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, holy crap. What is, you know, this isn't Russian. But anyway, so, yeah, Grand Am Mark II. Let's just use that for now.
Nice. So, yeah, the Tuscar series celebrated their roar before the 24 test this past weekend. So check out the Open Paddock website. We've got a few articles up on the results of said testing. Probably the thing to note most from the testing was the Daytona prototype, the Spirit of Daytona Corvette, overall had the quickest times from testing. So it will be fun as the season goes on to see how the differences in the P2 cars and the Daytona prototypes play out on the tracks. Is it going to be something like really like the heyday of the ALMS series when the P2s just kicked butt on the short twisty courses, and once they got to the big courses, the P1s just, you know, ate everybody's lunch?
Yeah, I think that's what we're looking at. Of course, the Daytona prototypes. Okay, you know, Grand Am or IMSA. IMSA used to sanction ALMS, right? And now they're the sanctioning body for this whole unified, blendified thing. But really, it's genuinely under the purview of the Daytona Motor Group or Motorsports Group. And they were definitely not going to let the Daytona prototypes play second fiddle. So it's no surprise that Daytona prototypes were fastest here in the roar before the 24, especially at Daytona International Speedway. You know, it's, of course. But I mean, you know, most of that circuit is, you know, going flat out on the oval. You got that little bus stop there at the end of the backstretch, you know, before the entrance to Oval, you know, the NASCAR Turn 3. And then you've got the, you know, the sequence of hairpins that make up the infield section of the road course. He uses his air quotes. You know, when you get to some of the twistier tracks, the tighter circuits, I think you will definitely see that gap close up significantly. And I think you're right, Mike. I think we could see, you know, a situation like we saw, you know, back when Penske and Andretti were fighting it out.
Porsche Spyder.
Yeah, with the Porsche Spyder. What an amazing car that was. And even Andretti with the Honda, you know, the Honda Acura.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Honda, yeah. Whatever. You know what I mean? You know, against the P1s of the Audis, that was magnificent stuff. And I think we could get that. But right now, yeah, the Daytona prototypes are certainly the top class, you know, bar none. The Le Mans, the GT Le Mans cars. Are certainly well ahead of the Daytona GT cars.
And, oh, man, I just have to say right now, that Corvette C7.
Oh, yes.
Damn.
You know, that wasn't at the
World
4 24.
That is one dead sexy car.
Yes, it is. It wasn't at testing, but, you know, just this week they released some shots and some renderings of it, and... Wow, is it an awesome piece of machinery.
It's got some nice new lines, that's for sure.
It does. I'm a Ford guy, and I'm looking at that thinking, yeah, I want it. I want it.
So will we see the C7R also in the World Challenge Series? Please, 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 please.
Oh,
please,
yeah,
please,
wouldn't it be nice?
Please, please,
wouldn't
please,
it be nice?
Please,
well,
please,
we could see it there at Mid-Ohio.
Oh, well. Speaking of World Challenge, that's a great little segue because they put out some press releases in the last couple of weeks just talking up how successful everything seems to be going right now. They're looking like the first couple of races, they're going to cap out on entries, somewhere around 80 entries total between all five classes that they will be running this year. And those of you who follow World Challenge will go, five classes? What's this you speak of? Because normally they ran four. Coming into this season, we've got the GTA. Well,
six, maybe, depending upon how you define it.
This year they're going to be running GT, GTS. They're going to be running Touring Car, TC. They'll be running Touring Car A and Touring Car B. Touring Car A is a new class for this season.
It is, and there's also a GTA class.
GTA?
It is for the gentleman drivers.
Oh, that's right.
Who want to drive their GT cars, but want to compete with like-minded or like-talented individuals. They're tired of getting their butt kicked by Randy Popes and
nice.
Scotty O'Connell. So, you know, they made this special. It's a driver class. It's not a car class. The car class fits to the GT spec. It's just for the gentleman drivers who enjoy coming out to the World Challenge events and racing and competing, but don't make their living driving a race car, if that makes sense.
So the Touring Car A class, Touring Car B basically is you come out, you put in, you know, roll cage, and you can run your car. That's pretty much it. There's a few other tweaks that you can make. TCA is pretty much the same thing, but there are a few more tweaks you can make. And the acceptable models are different. So
yeah, it's a little, you know, you get a little bump in performance.
Yeah.
You can use TCB are the B spec Econo boxes. You know, no, seriously, it's your Honda
4-wheel
Fit.
Drive class, just like you have at your local track.
Woohoo! Awesome.
It's your Honda Fits, Ford Fiestas,
you're talking about micro boxes, and not even Focus.
No. Focus would not be in TCB. So the Fiat 500, the Cinquecento, the Fit, the with the Versa, and the Fiesta, the Mazda 2. Those classic cars are your TCB cars. Your TCA are your other tuner-esque type of cards. And the way, as I read the rule book and the what you could do and what you could not do, it really came across to me as not being wholly different than the street touring class in SCCA Solo. So if you have a car well-prepared to compete street touring in SCCA Solo. So, you know, that means stress bars. That means you can run, new coilovers, making some other changes, but not a whole lot of engine modifications. Then you're good to go. You throw in a roll cage, fire bottle, and a racing seat and harness, and that's it. Other than that, it's pretty much a stock vehicle. And in fact, from Ford Racing, you can get the B spec parts for your brand new Ford Fiesta. So you can buy a Fiesta, get all the parts, and have a race car ready to go compete in TCB for about $25,000. That's pretty darn cool. Turnkey race car. They've really been working hard on trying to bring down the costs of competition. And boy, have they hit the mark. Like I said, 80-plus competitors amongst these. Now, of course, the touring car classes and the GT classes will not race the same races. It'll be two separate races, right?
Yeah.
But but still, I mean, that's huge participation. And it should make for some really amazing races.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I'm thoroughly enjoyed World Challenge out at Mid-Ohio, and I wish that I could get a few more events in the area that I could go see with them. That said, now we move to the butt end of the show.
don't say butt when we're talking about F1, because I've seen the nose on the new F1 car, and that just gets you.
Let's stop that discussion there. We're employing a premiership system here in the Open Paddock podcast, and F1 has been found to be lacking in their capability to hang with the other classes of racing that we follow, and has therefore been relegated to last on the podcast, mainly because of one issue. Well, many issues, but it's kind of the straw that broke the camel's back for me. They're doing this 2x points dealio to finish out the season next year. The final race of the season will be worth double points, so that, you know, those who are sitting around, you know, mired in, you know, second and third place in the championship, well behind Sebastian and Vettel, can sit there and say, so they're saying, so you're saying there's a chance. Yeah, sorry. Bernie wanted the last three races to be points paying. Double points paying, excuse me. But the teams would only agree to one race being double points paying. And then everybody tries to backpedal on it and say, well, the fans don't like it, so we didn't like it either. Well, if the teams didn't like it, it wouldn't have come to fruition. So whatever the case, they're tinkering with championship in ways they shouldn't, and I could care less. You've got a great new spec coming in next year. Very interesting to see where that's going to go, but we're sitting here very annoyed at what the point structure for next season is going to be. They're just jerking around with the points, and I'm tired of seeing it. And we talked about this before, and what they did with the Schumacher's points, and anyway, moving forward, Bernie is also not very keen on the New Jersey Grand Prix promoters, because he has basically said in statements that the organizers are in breach of contract, and at this point, Bernie would consider other promoters and venues.
I thought he was all about New Jersey.
I think he's all about New Jersey, but he's firing a shot across the bow of the current promoters and saying, get your act together.
It's Jersey. Has he ever had dealings with Jersey? Does he not know what Jersey is like?
Yes. You know what happens in that part of the world when you don't agree with somebody politically, you shut down bridges.
I was getting ready to say, you know, Bernie might end up finding out where Jamie Hoffa's buried.
He might. That would be good. continuing to pile on concern on the Lotus team, if you have been following it, we've got the first preseason test coming up, and Lotus is the only team who has said that they will not be at the first preseason test with a new chassis. Everybody else has either so far not announced that they're coming, or how should I say that? They have either announced that they're coming or have not said anything, but it's well assumed that they will be there. Lotus is the only team at this point who it's clear will not be at the first test with the new chassis. Piling on with that, their reserve driver, David Valsecchi, has basically said, yeah, I have not been paid either. You know, Kimmy and I were like this. he's also making great comments. I just love this. Somebody must have shoved a mic in his face and said, what are your options? And he says, well, you know, there's always IndyCar. Like, everybody in IndyCar is lining up to give you a check.
Right.
No. No, it doesn't work like that. Just because you've driven an F1 car at some point in your life doesn't mean you have the right to say. You know, it's just like when Formula One, the US F1 team was forming, and they were name dropping people like, yeah, you know, like Danica Patrick could be our driver, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. and, you know, AJ Foyt, and
right. They were like,
it really doesn't matter what you say at that point. He's just throwing stuff out there, and it's not going to stick because, you know what? If you're not actively trying to get an IndyCar seat right now, if you don't have money behind your name, which he does not, because, you know, he didn't get a paycheck from Lotus, that means that he didn't secure his own paycheck through sponsorship. Kind of interesting. I don't see how he has any chance in – yeah. Doesn't have a chance at all getting an IndyCar seat.
Not going to happen.
You know, I hate to bring the downer on the mood for the podcast, but Michael Schumacher's accident is certainly very concerning.
Yeah, it's pretty serious. You know, he wanged his head pretty good.
Yeah, and he was.
As last I heard, he's still out. Is that right?
Yeah, that is correct. He was skiing off trail in I can't even remember the name of the slopes in the Alps, and just supposedly is a very slow speed. He wasn't, you know, going too fast. He just caught a ski on a rock and ended up landing on something, you know, head first.
Another rock.
Hit a rock with his head, but he was even wearing a helmet. He actually was wearing a helmet and still wasn't.
Well, you know, a lot of people made something of the fact that the helmet cracked and shattered and whatnot. But, you know, the thing is, you know, a skiing helmet like a cycling helmet is not like a motorsports helmet. Mm-hmm. You know, right. It is, a cycling helmet is a one-shot thing. It's a singular-use item. And I'm speaking out of my ass here, but I suspect that skiing helmets are probably similar in that, you know, they're there to protect you once. And, you know, if you need it that once, well, you need to go buy a new helmet afterwards. And so, you know, having had a number of offs on, you know, while cycling, I mean, yeah, I know you look at me now and you would think, doesn't look like you've ever pedaled anything, lard ass. But no, I used to do quite a bit of cycling, and you crack your favorite head on the side of the tarmac, and you go buy a new helmet. So, you know, I'm not going to make much of that, but it was a pretty hard hit, and if he hadn't had the helmet, you know, his fate might already be determined.
Yeah. Basically, what has happened since this accident, he was initially put in a medically induced coma, and I think two surgeries have happened to try and reduce swelling on his brain and all of that. Mm-hmm. This is a serious head injury. He is still in a coma. This is over 2 weeks since this happened. And at this point, there has to be concern for long-term damage, and I hope and pray that that's not the case. That said, all kinds of wackiness has been ensuing as well with members of the media dressing up like priests to try and gain access to the hospital room. What?
You don't get much lower than that.
Yeah, you don't. Why would you ever talk to a member of the media if this is how you're treated by them? That's just really sad. Going forward,
want to make it known that we at Open Paddock are by and large Protestants and would never dress up as a priest.
Nice.
You Irish boy. Don't bring your sectarian violence on your show. Golly. Anyway, moving far away from the subject. The first preseason test is slated to take place at Jerez January 28th through 31st. So here in the next 2 weeks, we are going to see F1 cars on track. As we mentioned before, Lotus is going to miss the first preseason test. We've had announcements from McLaren. They're going to be launching on January 24th. And so far, that is the earliest launch date we've heard. Everybody else has said they will be launching or unveiling at the track at this point. That may change as we get closer to the date, but it sounds like everybody is hot and heavy on, you know, getting these cars even ready for the first test, and nobody's really planning on anything big media splash events like we've seen in the past. So McLaren will be your first chance probably on January 24th. However, we have heard all kinds of wackiness as to what these cars are going to look like. One mock-up on Autosport showed something very disturbing coming off the front of the car. And we will have that confirmed or denied here in the next 2 weeks. So keep your ears tuned and your eyes covered.
Yeah. Hide your children.
Yeah, I was going to say, children under the age of 13 are not allowed to look at the Formula One site.
You know, it's a good thing we've got all this modern technology. So as the F1 cars are going around track, they can always superimpose, you know, the black censored box over the front.
They can pixelate the front of the car.
F1 is currently not able to be shown in the United States of America due to FCC regulations. Anyway, that would be the end of the F1 section of the podcast, and that opens us up for one last round. Anything left, gentlemen, before we close out the show? I take that as a no.
I got nothing.
Very well.
I burned up all my time.
Thank you for joining us on this New Year's edition of the F1 podcast.
No, Mike. No.
Thank you for joining us in this 2014 first premiere edition of our drinking podcast. We thank you for taking time this evening to allow us to enjoy ourselves on the airwaves.
Please send Mike Booze money to Doug at Open Padding.
Thank you, and good night.